The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Someday, Liz, I'll go back, said Private First Class Peter Robert Zanetta.
This is Michael Savage. We're celebrating the anniversary of the invasion of Normandy when Hitler was defeated. Let's listen to Ronald Reagan.
Her story by quoting her father, who promised that he would return to Normandy. She ended with a promise to her father, who died 8 years ago of cancer. I'm going there, Dad. And I'll see the beaches and the barricades and the monuments. I'll see the graves, and I'll put flowers there just like you wanted to do. I'll feel all the things you made me feel through your stories and your eyes. I'll never forget what you went through, Dad, nor will I let anyone else forget. And Dad, I'll always be proud. Through the words of his loving daughter, who is here with us today, a D-Day veteran has shown us the meaning of this day far better than any president can. It is enough for us to say about Private Zanetta and all the men of honor and courage who fought beside him 4 decades ago, we will always remember. We will always be proud. We will always be prepared, so we may be always free.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. That, of course, was the voice of America's greatest president, Ronald Reagan. Literally, when you listen to him, if you didn't find yourself choking up, you're not a human being. You should probably join a local union or the Democrat Party. And Barack Obama, who has again ignored the greatest day in American history, when so many young men sacrificed their lives so that we can be free and I could talk with you on the radio, for example, and we could have an individual of such high caliber in the White House who spits in the face of the men who died that he could even be president. Of course, the big story to you, the average listener, is not D-Day. It's that the stock market is booming over the Walker victory in Wisconsin. Make no mistake about what I'm about to tell you. There have been several elections since the imposter was foisted upon us. There have been several elections when the American people were allowed to go to the polls and to say what they believed to be true, ever since the imposter was foisted upon us by George Soros and other forces that we don't even know. And in both cases, in virtually every case, as a matter of fact, the people have voted down the imposter and his policies. Make no mistake about it, the vermin in the media are tricking you, just as they tried to trick you yesterday, telling you that it was neck and neck in Wisconsin. And just as they covered the story up across America, they're covering up the fact that if the election were held today, as tepid as Romney is, he would beat Obama by at least 20 points. There's no question in my mind that this victory in Wisconsin spells the end of Obama's tyranny over the American people. That is, unless they can get enough illegal aliens to vote as many times as possible. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. My recommendation to Governor Romney is to get rid of your team that is killing you. Get rid of those idiots who are running your campaign. They ran McCain off the rails. They're going to run you off the rails. And learn something from Scott Walker. Learn something from Scott Walker. Learn that Scott Walker says it like it is. And stop mincing words, Romney. And stop acting like a wimp, Romney. And stop acting like a putz, Romney. I want you to listen to this for 1 minute. Because one of the first things Walker said in his victory speech, which struck me last night as I was cooking spaghetti, is he talked about God and prayers. Something that we are all desperate to hear in this degenerate nation. Listen to clip one.
Next, I particularly want to thank you for your prayers because for the last year and a half, the thing that has sustained Tonette and I and Matt and Alex is people many times, people I've never met before, come off the line, come off the farm and say, Governor, we're praying for you and your family. I can't tell you what that means to me.
So here's a man who said that prayer sustained him, that the people's prayers sustained him. And on the other hand, we have an atheist for a president, so far as I could tell. Forget the Muslim part of it. He's just a narcissistic atheist. And then we have Romney, who's obviously a very religious man who's been intimidated by Wolf Blitzer and the other rats on the left into even mentioning his faith. No, Mr. Romney, it's time to mention your faith. Yes, Mr. Romney, it's time to get rid of those Brutuses who are running you off the rails with their tepid campaign. Mr. Romney, listen to me. Tear down that wall, Mr. Romney. Tear down that wall of those Republican advisors who are destroying your campaign. And go hire Scott Walker's campaign manager. Go hire Scott Walker's campaign directors and get rid of the Brutuses who are destroying you. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. I'd like to point out something on my website that I don't see in many places. There are pictures from D-Day that I'd like you to look at. You want to see faces? They look like the boy next door. They weren't any different than the kid next door. They were just like the boy next door. And they went there and they were scared, and many of them didn't want to be there. Most of them didn't want to be there. They would rather have stayed home with their girlfriends. They would rather have hid under the cover or gone to the movies, but they couldn't. They had to go there. And when they did, they gave us our freedom. That's exactly the reality of what happened in World War II. And look at what we have in the White House today. A narcissist, a man who cavorts with the likes of rock and roll stars as opposed to war heroes on the anniversary of D-Day. It's enough to make you sick. But America knows the truth about Obama. They know he's an imposter. And the stock market knows that he's an imposter. And the stock market boomed today over the victory in Wisconsin. Why did the stock market boom? Because they saw light at the end of the tunnel created by the illegitimi non caberundum. The illegitimi who have ensnared us in their lies, coated us with their honey tongues, and deceived us with the media that they control. The stock market said there is hope that this imposter will be gone come November, and we can get back to being America again. We can get back to doing business again. We can get back to running the country again and regain our national pride. That's what's at stake, which is that everything's at stake. And the only way that Romney can win, as I can tell, is to stop playing the middle and start playing like Walker, who was anything but a firebrand. Remember, Scott Walker is a moderate, middle-of-the-road Republican. He is simply a fiscal conservative who risked everything for the sake of doing what was right for his state, and in this case, probably for the country. He risked everything for the sake of what was right for the state of Wisconsin. That's what he did it for. And he's the first governor in American history who has ever survived a recall election. And this, mind you, is in a Democrat-controlled state. This is in a state that has a long history of far-left activism. Wisconsin is a very left-wing state. And did you know that 4 out of 10 union members voted for Walker? For him to retain his job, 40% of people in unions knew what was good for the state. And this should be the beginning. The next one to go should be Jerry Brown in California. And the reason I say that this could happen is because two cities in the state of California yesterday revised the pensions of their cities because they knew they were going broke, and these were Democrat-controlled cities. The city of San Diego scaled back the pensions that the cops and firemen were taking out of the city because they were unsustainable. And even Democrats said, we can't afford these pensions. We all like our cops. We all like our firemen. But we can't afford these kinds of gold-plated pensions. These are insane. Pushed down our throats by these unions. And, of course, this is what's going to happen. Voters in California backed pension cuts for city workers, even in Democrat-controlled cities, just as Wisconsin residents voted yesterday not to recall Governor Scott Walker, who has become an enemy of bloated pensions. Two California cities dealt blows of their own to organized labor. San Diego and San Jose, both Democrat controlled. Overwhelmingly, in these Democrat cities of California, voters approved ballot initiatives designed to help balance ailing budgets by cutting retirement bennies for city workers. 70% of San Jose, California voters favored scaling back pensions. 70% in a Democrat-controlled city, to show you how out of touch Jerry Brown is with reality, and to show you what liars the rats in the media are. The fact of the matter is, even Democrats recognize that these skyrocketing pension costs are killing them. That's right. And so as I say to you, ladies and gentlemen, if you know which way the wind is blowing, it's certainly not blowing in the way of Barack Obama and big unions. No way on earth is it blowing that way. These initiatives in California should provide models for other cities and for the state government where pension reform efforts have been stalled by Governor Brown. But the desire for pension reform in California and America is huge. That is why Scott Walker retained his seat for the first time in American history. 1-800-449-8255. It's a big day for America. And if you know which way the wind blows, you know it's blowing against the communist movement in America. I'll be right back.
Savage.
And the greatest armada in military history is assembled in England for an assault on Hitler's fortress Europe, all under the supreme command of General Dwight D. Eisenhower, who has British General Montgomery at his side. He lies at complete control of the air and cover the surface forces as Allied troops pile into landing craft. 500 warships lay down a withering barrage, and it's the beginning of the end for Hitler's
greatest invasion in American human history, and Barack Hussein Obama is busy fundraising in San Francisco. Spits on the graves of the war debt. It's enough to make you weep, but just turn it into black rage. Turn it into rage inside your heart. Turn it into rage in your heart and remember who these communists really are and how they hate this country. Never mind the smiling faces. Never mind liars like Wolf Blitzer and the vermin on MSNBC. Remember what red-blooded Americans feel today. And remember that you are the majority. Never forget you are the majority and you hold the future of this nation in your hand. Never, ever forget the power you really have. Don't be deceived by the rats in the media. They are the worst in history. And you can justify it because that's who they are. But how do you explain a president of the United States spitting on all of those crosses in Normandy? How do you explain the man not paying any attention to all of the men who died so that an imposter like he could be president of the United States? It's enough to make you crazy and sick. But don't let it make you crazy and sick. Make it make you angry so that you go out and vote this man out of office. How's that for partisanship? Does that work for you? You see, this is a radio talk show. This is not the news. If you want the news, I don't even know where to tell you to go because there is no news. CNN is not the news. MSNBC is not the news. NBC, ABC, CBS, they all are biased. The only difference between Michael Savage and them is I tell you what I think. I don't try to make believe I'm neutral. I am not neutral. I am not neutral. This is one man's opinion. This is one man's opinion. That's what talk radio is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be the news because you all know that the news is not the news anymore, if it ever was. It's always been biased. It's always been biased. It's always been subjective, depending upon who's telling you the news. So I'm telling you how I see the news. The news is that the stock market boomed because Scott Walker beat big unions and beat Obama. That's number one. And number two, We know today definitively that Barack Obama hates the military and is unproud to be an American, just as Michelle Obama said the first day she was ever proud to be an American was when her husband was made president. That's who they still are. They're still far-left college radicals who hate this country and its values to their core. Make no mistake about all of the smile buttons and all of the vegetable gardens. They still hate the country, as far as I can tell. New York, WOR. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Yeah, I just wanted to fill in your listeners and a couple of points. The stock market is going up. It's going to continue going up, and it's got nothing to do with Barack Obama.
Wait. Hold on. You're saying I'm wrong in saying the market boomed today because of the election in Wisconsin? That's your main contention?
No. I'm talking about over the last few months.
Here's the last few months? What happened to Facebook when it came out? What was that all about?
Oh, I saw right through that. I didn't touch it.
Okay, let's try to figure out what you're saying. The stock market has been booming for a few months?
It's been going up over the last few months. It's going to continue, and it's got nothing to do with anything Obama is doing.
You don't think that today's jump in the stock market was a direct reflection of the fact that Scott Walker stood up to the big unions and that he's a fiscal conservative? You don't believe that?
No, absolutely. I agree with that 100%. But I'm looking at the big picture here. If you analyze what's going on in Europe between Spain and Italy and Portugal and Greece, sooner or later the Germans are going to figure out that all their money is going to maintain Europe. They're going to break up the euro.
I hear you. No, I understand. The generic statement you're making is true, but I'm glad that you agree with me as a stock market guy, that direct relationship to Scott Walker's defeating big unions and the Democrat machine. Thank you very much. I think anybody with any common sense who can do any analysis would conclude, as I concluded, they cannot wait until the imposter goes back to Hawaii. They cannot wait until he leaves. They can't wait until his regime is gone from Washington so that America can get back to business again. They've never seen anything like this guy. And they expressed it today. The stock market boomed.
Savage.
How do you feel about President Obama not celebrating any commemoration of D-Day? It's D-Day, and President Obama is doing what he's known to do, which is cavort with entertainers and raise money. 68th anniversary of America's brutal landing on the shores of Normandy where, oh goodness, so many men were killed so that we can be free in this country. And here he is holding two fundraisers before moving on to Beverly Hills to stage two more fundraisers. And so that is how the president is commemorating D-Day. Neither a speech, nor a written proclamation, not this year, nor the year before. How about First Lady Michelle Obama, who is loved so much by so many Americans? She says that she's joined forces with so many military families. And what is Michelle Obama going to be doing for D-Day? Well, she'll be celebrating it the way she's known to celebrate things. Michelle Obama is in New York City for a fundraiser. And then she's going to Philadelphia not to put flags on graves, nor flowers on tombstones of veterans. But she's going to Philly to meet with campaign volunteers. Do you think that Obama's failure to mark D-Day is a fitting example of how a president should act? How do you feel about that? How could any veteran in the United States of America not understand that these people in the White House have never changed their stripes? Inside, they are the same far-left radicals they have ever been, ever since their college days, if not before. They despise the military. They hate the police. They hate the flag. They hate America. They hate everything that we stand for, in my estimation. There's no other way to put it anymore. These are desperate times. And unless men like me put themselves on the line, risking God knows what and from whom, to tell you how it is, we have no chin over the United States of America. Look at Scott Walker. Look at Scott Walker. Look how the big unions tried to crush him. Look at how Obama tried to crush him. Look how the Democrat machine tried to crush him. And the man stood tall and proud, and he won. And this is in a Democrat-controlled state. Can you imagine what would happen if the election were held today, even with a weak presidential candidate such as Romney? Romney would sweep by 20 points, in my estimation. And that's why I have to say again to those who listen to this show from the Romney campaign, I know you will not give this message to Romney because you are the problem. You're not the solution. You campaign managers for Romney who listen to this show to see how the real America thinks, you're the reason that he's not doing better. But you have to go. He has to throw you out, and he has to hire Scott Walker's campaign people and get rid of you because you're all a bunch of Brutuses. That's my opinion. It's one man's opinion. Pardon me. Pardon me. How did you feel listening to Ronald Reagan as he cracked up, as he broke up, rather, inside, remembering the sacrifices that these young men made? How did you feel about that compared to this entertainer we have in this? I've never seen anything like it. It gets sicker by the day. John Bon Jovi on Air Force One? John Bon Jovi on Air Force One? How do you feel about a country that has a president who does not commemorate the greatest invasion in the history of the world, the one that liberated us from the Nazi barbarians? How do you feel about that? Mac and Philly, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, you're just speaking my mind. I'm 20 years retired Navy special ops, five tours in the Persian Gulf. People I knew didn't come back. Only two of those deployments were on sea. One was on a minesweep. One was an aircraft carrier. I'm just furious. I believe this guy hates us. I believe he's the worst enemy we have, and I believe he sold my brother SEALs down the river, the 30 that were killed. It's just ridiculous. He's goofing off and going around because the Marxy. It's all about him. It isn't about us. He doesn't care about. I worked with a guy in my job that was shot, and he's going through all kinds of hoops to try to get disability. And then you got this guy, like you just said, flying with Bon Jovi on Air Force One, having a hooping it up and hollering. It's furious.
Mac. You know, you said something in passing that I once made an issue of that no one's picked up on in the media. Under the commander-in-chief's leadership, this commander-in-chief's leadership, we lost 30 men in one helicopter shoot down. To this day, there's been no investigation of why they were all put on a slow-flying Chinook helicopter. It was something like, if I remember correctly, 22 Navy SEALs and seven Army Rangers. Am I correct?
30 that we lost. My brother and sister, special warriors that we lost. They were sold down the river. And
that's right. So they hold up Obama as a great commander-in-chief, but they never mention in the media, do they, that it was he who was president when this helicopter was shot down. I'd like to know which general it was or which girl from Harvard within the Defense Department ordered them all aboard that helicopter. And I'd like to see that individual tried for homicide.
I agreed. And then the other point you made about what happened in November when the sub pops up right in the middle of our battle fleet and whoops our tail. You're all over it. I'm glad to hear you, and I'm sure speaking up about it. What I say when I voice my president opinion is speaking.
Well, Mac, look, how come military men still vote for Obama? Well, what is that all about? How did they not see through him?
Because they're idiots. They're not thinking. They're not reasoning. They're not educated. They're thinking about themselves. Maybe they're just going in for the money and for benefits. They're not really thinking about what's going on in the world. There's a world out there, and you had alluded on something else. BIBLE, basic instruction before leaving Earth. We've gotten away from it. Romney needs to pick up his message and go in there like an attack dog. Not like
that's right. That's right. Stop being Mr. A Country Club Republican. Because he's going to get clobbered if he keeps it up. Mac, I'm sending you the only present that I think is worth giving you, Trickle Down Tyranny. I think you'll get a lot out of that great book. So we're celebrating two things today. was celebrating or commemorating, really. I don't know how you can celebrate D-Day when so many of our men died. We are commemorating the heroes from D-Day, and we are celebrating the victory of common sense and fiscal sanity over union insanity. Let's put it to you that way. But how do you feel about Obama? How do you feel about Obama hitting the beaches of campaign fundraising instead of saying something about D-Day? Why is he not doing it? Because he doesn't need the veterans? He's already got them? You mean he's already got the vet vote? How do they know they have the vet vote? I almost said the vet vote. How do they know? Tallahassee, Will, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I want your opinion on a thought that I have. I believe that this man is so radical and so far to the left and so hateful towards this country that he will do anything desperately, even causing a catastrophic event inside our own country, to declare martial law in order to keep his office, maybe declare war on a sovereign nation. He will do whatever. I've been a police officer for years, and ever since 9/11, all we've ever done is been trained to police our own people. And I keep asking the question to my superior officers, when are we going to go after the thugs and the scumbags and stop worrying about what we're going to do when, quote, we have to control the chaos and keep the unity of command in place? You know what? Guess what? If it hits the fan that bad, half of us are going to take care of our families, and you can take this crappy paycheck. You won't let me put in jail today. You want me to wait around on it, but yet now we've got a guy sitting in there who will do anything, include turn on his own country in order to keep his office, just like Adolf Hitler did.
Well, you know, no one can make a comment on your comments because you've spoken your mind. And if I thought you were alone in your opinion, I would, let's say, have cut you off or said that's too radical. To be honest with you, I think that many police see the world the same way you do. They know something is afoot. They know something illegitimate is bound to happen. And they also don't like the idea that they're liable to be used like the police in Germany were used when the illegitimate took office there. They're terrified that they're going to be asked to turn on their own brothers and sisters. So let's leave it at that. Let's pray that democracy prevails as it did in Wisconsin. And let's pray that the legitimate election that occurs in November is allowed to go through, that there's no catastrophe before then, and that this man will be a one-trick pony and he'll be gone. Do I actually think that's what will happen? I don't know, Will. I don't know. I know that Eric Holder, the top cop in America, is fighting every state that's trying to purge the voter rolls of illegal aliens. I don't understand how Eric Holder has not been impeached for taking the side of non-citizens. I really don't understand what the Republican Party is worth, if anything, if they will let the Attorney General fight states who are simply trying to uphold the Constitution. I really fear for the nation if we have no Republican Party. And so therefore, Will, all I can say is thank you for putting your life on the line every day, because I do know what it must be like through a family member who's in the police force, that each day that you go out, I don't care what the rats on the left have to say, you don't know if you're coming back that night. That's true whether it's a normal traffic stop or patrolling the inner city. Is that true, Will?
Yeah, that is, Dr. Savage, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate men like you who are willing to risk their career, who are willing to say, you know what, I'm going to go against all norms and get out there and push my opinion because it's the truth, and you're going to stand up for guys like me, that vet who was just on the phone. And I'll tell you, Dr. Savage, there are a lot of veteran police officers who've been doing it since me, early 90s, who have just come to the conclusion that one day our government's going to ask us to betray the Constitution, and we will risk death or jail because we will not deny the citizens of the United States who we swore their service to protect to go against them because our government tells us to.
Well, it's a very volatile topic that you're bringing up, and I'll deal with it in as delicate a manner as I can, Will. Again, I want to repeat that I have read on the Internet very similar opinions from other police officers who have said the same thing, that if the illegitimate in the White House should ever demand that local police become Gestapo for them in any kind of attempt to grab power or suppress the population or seize the guns of legitimate citizens, they will leave the police departments and literally fight with the people against the government. I pray to God that this is all paranoia, and I pray to God that it's all fictional, truthfully, Will. I have nothing else to say on the matter, but thank you very much for your service to America. Wow, that was quite a call, wasn't it? It's a very big day, and the only thing that you should remember, I really, if I were to say to you, if you're only going to listen for another few minutes, there are two take-home messages from today's Savage Nation. Number one is that Scott Walker's victory is a huge victory against big unions and Obama. And it's a terrible, terrible, terrible image for Obama of what's going to happen in November unless they rig the election. And they can do it in many different ways. And they're working on doing it. They can have illegal aliens vote. They can attack Iran in August or September, which I'm sure they're going to do in order to rally the American people behind them. The presidents have gone to war for the same reason, which is to hold on to power. So I think absolutely will they destroy a nation to stay in power. What do you mean they wouldn't? Many presidents have done so. Many presidents have gone to war to hold on to power. Why should he be any different? So as far as war goes, I think it's almost a guarantee that the United States will have some major league knockout punch against the Hitler of Iran come August or September. Let's put it this way. If I were a betting man, I'd bet on that with a very, very high margin. I would doubt very much they're not going to do it. That's number one. So that's the October surprise, but it'll come in September. That's number one. The illegal aliens, they're going to try and do something with having them vote, which they're already doing by attacking states that are trying to purge voter rolls of the illegal aliens. And all I can say is that if you're a Republican in any state of this union, don't cave in to this government because you're doing the thing that you're supposed to do, which is to uphold the Constitution and make certain that only people who are eligible to vote, vote, period. That's the story. That's what they died for in Normandy. That's what they died for in Normandy. They died for the sacred nature of the ballot box. That's why they took a bullet in the guts. If for any other reason, if for no other reason, they died that the vote should be sacred, not that some bum from Mexico could come here and vote illegally and have an illegitimate government say that we're on the side of the illegal alien. I've never seen anything like this. You know, you think that I tell you what I really feel. Well, I do tell you what I really feel, but you're getting the tip of the iceberg. You don't know what a volcano roars in me every day when I see what these people are doing to this country. So on that note, I'll take a little break and be right back.
Savage.
We are talking about two things, the Scott Walker victory, which is commonsensical in Wisconsin, but he stood up to a major machine and unlimited union money, by the way. And we're talking about what it means for the elections in November, which is that if you're working for Obama, you should be looking for another job. That is unless you can rig the election. We're also talking about the fact that the president of the United States of America is not honoring the heroes of D-Day. Instead, he is spitting on their graves while raising money in San Francisco and Beverly Hills. And believe me, the military will know about this, and they will circulate their emails to each other, and it's going to cost him probably hundreds of thousands of veterans' votes, in my estimation, at least amongst the fighting men, not amongst the gold brickers who sit in the Pentagon and do nothing. Nevertheless, we can talk about these things because this is a very big day in America. 2.5 million people voted in Wisconsin. They exceeded the 2.16 million people who voted in the 2010 race that elected Walker as governor. Did you hear this? And so if you want to look at exit polls, you can break it down in a number of different ways. But the fact of the matter is, just summarize it in your own head and don't look at the details. The details can blur your mind. But the fact of the matter is, he won by a landslide. 7 points in a race that is so divisive, a race that is so charged with so much money and so much rhetoric and so many ads, is a monster victory. A monster victory for fiscal conservatism and a monster loss for big unions. Monster. Did you know that Walker won 18% of those who say they will still support Obama in November? 18% of those who say no matter what happened, they're going to vote for Obama in November, but they voted for Walker. What does that mean? Oh, it means an awful lot. It means an awful lot. It means that maybe 20% of the Obama voters are not even going to vote for him again. Maybe they've seen through him. Maybe they see that insane Ludwig-like spending, spending like King Ludwig II of Bavaria, is bankrupting the United States of America, and that Scott Walker's idea of reining in spending is the way to go. It's that simple. Real simple. Tears from the Democrats saying democracy is dead because democracy dared rear its face in the thuggish race. So democracy rears its face and they break into tears saying democracy is dead. Let's get a caller. Jacqueline in Houston, Texas. Go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes. Dr. Savage?
Yes.
Hello. I'm so
yes,
happy.
Yes, go. You got it. Jacqueline, please talk fast. I only have a minute.
Okay. I called because my heart is heavy today. I was in France during D-Day.
Okay. Hello? But you have to tell us more, please, Jacqueline.
I was in the French underground at 8:14. My mother was from Normandy, and she saw the Red Sea where the blood was everywhere. We know what it is to fight a war. We know what a war is. And
well,
how
do you feel today about President Obama not commemorating D-Day? Does that affect you in any way?
Oh, absolutely. I was upset. Oh, I was near tears all day. I've been upset all day.
Well, I'm sorry to hear it, but I thank you very much for calling the Savage Nation. I don't mean to cut the lady off, but time is almost out in this hour. If you have appreciated what I've been saying in this hour, I'll be on for another couple of hours across America on your local station. Two questions. How do you feel about the Scott Walker victory? Do you think it will affect the presidential election as I do? And how do you feel about Barack Obama spitting on the graves of the war dead, especially those who are buried in Normandy, who he hasn't even taken the time out of his fundraising to acknowledge? How do you feel about that? Because that's what we're going to talk about today on the Savage Nation. Phone number 1-800-449-8255. This is the one and only Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Someday, Liz, I'll go back, said Private First Class Peter Robert Zanetta of the 37th Engineer Combat Battalion and first assault wave to hit Omaha Beach. Lisa Zanetta Hen began her story by quoting her father who promised that he would return to Normandy. She ended with a promise to her father who died 8 years ago of cancer. I'm going there, Dad. And I'll see the beaches and the barricades and the monuments. I'll see the graves and I'll put flowers there just like you wanted to do. I'll feel all the things you made me feel through your stories and your eyes. I'll never forget what you went through, Dad, nor will I let anyone else forget. And Dad, I'll always be proud. Through the words of his loving daughter, who is here with us today, a D-Day veteran has shown us the meaning of this day far better than any president can. It is enough for us to say about Private Zanetta and all the men of honor and courage who fought beside him 4 decades ago, we will always remember. We will always be proud. We will always be prepared.
Play the Marine Corps theme.
So we may be always free.
Yes. So Obama has not commemorated D-Day. He's commemorating raising money in San Francisco and Beverly Hills. Not even a brief event to commemorate the dead on the 68th anniversary of America's brutal landing on the shores of France. Instead, San Francisco, two fundraisers. Beverly Hills, two more fundraisers. And, of course, the First Lady, who has made much of her Joining Forces campaign with military families, also had nothing to say about D-Day. She was in New York City for a fundraiser and then on to Philadelphia to meet with more campaign volunteers. How do you feel that the Obamas refuse to mark D-Day in any way? Do you feel that this reflects upon them in any way, or do you think that it's time to forget D-Day? Do you feel, as the ACLU does and Wolf Blitzer does and the others on MSNBC, that, oh, all of those deaths on the beaches of Normandy and all of those valiant efforts somewhere deep in the Pacific and God knows where else, by so many of those mainly white males, why, it's time to put it aside. After all, it wasn't inclusive. I mean, World War II was hardly an inclusive war. And so how can we celebrate a victory of dead white males like this? Is that what you feel? Is it time to forget D-Day, or is there something to remember? Well, you know how I feel. Never mind my sarcasm and my cynicism. But you see, a nation is defined by its collective memory. A nation is defined by its heroes. A nation is defined by its borders, its language, and its culture. And when communist regimes take over countries, the first thing they do is erase the collective memory of the real heroes. And so when the Marxist Obama was foisted upon us by George Soros and others, as best I can figure it out, Obama basically did what all communists do. The first act that I know of that was official, one of the first anyway, was he sent a bust of Winston Churchill, which had been in the White House since World War II. He sent it back to England as if to say, get this dead white male out of my office. Get the memory of the man who saved England out of my office. That's one of the first acts that he engaged in. And ever since then, he has been tearing down this nation's collective memory, brick by brick, image by image, day by day. You say, well, come on, it can't be that bad. How come I don't know about these things? I'm just an average listener to radio. You seem to be exaggerating what the Obamas are doing. Well, that's because I'm paid to do the things that you don't do. You have other things to do. I have one main job, which is to do this. My job is to analyze what's going on and give you one man's opinion. If you agree with me more than you disagree with me, you become a regular listener. And if you disagree with me more than you agree with me, you don't listen anymore. And since I've been on the radio for 18 years, even though people said I wouldn't last 18 minutes, there must be more people who agree with me than disagree with me. And so if you'd like to call the show today and tell me how you feel about the Obamas spitting on the graves of the war dead in Normandy, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. And, of course, we must talk about the victory of Scott Walker in Wisconsin and how the newspapers in America buried the story because they are on the side of big unions and the big Democrat Party. These are very important stories. I'd like to play for you the soundbite from Scott Walker where he thanks basically people for their prayers. And I want you to compare that with the atheism that's coming out of the White House. Listen.
Next, I particularly want to thank you for your prayers because for the last year and a half, the thing that has sustained Tonette and I and Matt and Alex is people many times, people I've never met before, come off the line, come off the farm and say, Governor, we're praying for you and your family. I can't tell you what that means to me.
Notice the emphasis on the word prayer. It's, my ears perked up when he said that. The word prayer is not allowed from the Obama White House. If you say prayer, you're fired from the White House. You're not allowed to make any mention of it. And then listen to the next two clips. They're very important, two and three.
For me, it was the first trip to Independence Hall. And even though as a kid growing up, I thought of our founders as superheroes, as bigger than life, standing in that hall, it dawned on me that these were ordinary people who did something quite extraordinary. They didn't just risk their political careers. They didn't just risk their businesses. They literally risked their lives for the freedom we hold so dear today. And the men and women in uniform in this country defend every single day. In times of crisis.
Now listen to what he just said. Compare Scott Walker's speech to Obama and then compare it to Romney, who says almost nothing. I frankly think Scott Walker ought to run for the presidency. At least he should be nominated as the vice president. If Romney had any desire to really win the American people, he should take Scott Walker's campaign strategy and campaign advisors and fire all of his Brutuses and use them. Listen to clip three now.
In times of crisis, what has made America amazing has been the fact that throughout the more than 200 years of our history, there have been men and women of courage who stood up and decided it was more important to look out for the future of their children and their grandchildren than their own political futures.
Wow. God, do we need to hear men like this? It makes you remember what America is. Because when Obama speaks, my heart drops. When Obama speaks, I feel sick. When the Democrats who attack the flag and country and the military and the police and the family on every single occasion, in every single speech, I get sick. And then I get angry. And then I get on the radio. And then I roar and tell you exactly what's going on in this country. It's as simple as that. So I'll take your calls if you care to comment on any of these things. And we'll see what you have to say about these things on the Savage Nation. New York City, WOR. Bill, go ahead. You're first up in this hour.
I agree with you, Dr. Savage, that the president might try to pull a fast one on just before the election and bomb Iran, but I believe that would backfire. The nation is war-torn because we've had over 10 years in Afghanistan, about 10 years in Iraq. President Bush received a lot of criticism when he went into Iraq, and I think in 2004 he won big time. But
What you're saying is correct, Bill, but there are going to be no troops on the ground in Iran. It's going to be a straight-out Air Force bombing campaign, cruise missiles. The Israelis will do the heavy lifting in the form of using their fighter jets to drop the bunker-busting bombs. There's not going to be any American troops in Iran. They're just going to smash the nuclear industry into the Stone Age. That's all that's going to happen. And then, of course, the vermin in the media who have conveniently swept the death of the Navy SEALs under the rug will say that he's the greatest commander since Dwight D. Eisenhower, and they're going to use it as a campaign strategy. It just might work, by the way.
Look what happened in Egypt, where we had a government that was very, very favorable to the United States, and now it's being taken over by the Islamic Brothers.
Yes, that's right, but I called it the Arab winter long before anybody else saw what was going on. But has it affected any a politician in America? They don't know what's going on, or they're worse yet, they actually are ushering in the Islamists. I don't know which is which. I don't know whether our political class is dumb, drugged, or traitorous. I have no idea, but one of the three applies. If they're on the side of the Islamists against Mubarak, they are either dumb, drugged, or traitorous. There's no other answer for it.
Okay, well, the American people had their say in 2010, and in all the years I've been following politics, I've never seen a turnover in the House of Representatives as strong as it was when the Republicans had in the House.
Yes, that's right. We had a major election, which was a mandate on the imposter in 2010, and they all said no to the imposter. Now we had another mandate on the imposter and the unions, and again, even a Democrat state like Wisconsin said no to the imposter.
Exactly, and this is the third time this happened. We had a United States senator win the seat Massachusetts that hadn't been won by a Republican in 60 years. In New York,
that's right. That's right. Again, they said no to the imposter and the Democrat machine. Bill, thank you very much. We'll be back in a moment on the Savage Nation. Okay, hang on before I go to break. You need to know this. There's three kinds of people. Those who make things happen, those who watch things happen, and those who wonder what happened. These are tough economic times, but tough people can make things happen. Like Jenny. This is her income at home story. Here's what she wrote. I spent my life working in the corporate world with far too little time with my kids. Then out of the blue, I got laid off. I was looking for a job when I learned about incomeathome.com. So I ordered my decision pack, got a call from my coach, and got started. In my first full month, I made $1,300, and I'm on my way to making more than I've ever made. And I do it around my family's needs. Now look, some earn less, many earn more, and some earn a lot more. So go to incomeathome.com to see the results you can expect. No matter your age or education, you can literally earn money from your kitchen table. Make it happen for you and your family at incomeathome.com. Write it down, incomeathome.com. You got it? Incomeathome.com.
Savage.
Savage.
Well, I'm going to play a soundbite for you of one of the crybaby liberals breaking down in tears saying that democracy died because fiscal sanity reigned. Listen to this.
Mike volunteered for Barrett, voted today. You say you're very disappointed. A lot of folks here outside the Capitol sharing your opinion tonight.
We're not just disappointed. This is the end of democracy. We just got outspent $34 million to $4 million. This was the biggest election in America, and I hope you keep me on tonight because this hurts us all. Every single one of you out there in the nation, if you're watching, democracy died tonight.
You're very emotional.
I'm very emotional because we all had a lot invested in this. This was it. If we didn't win tonight, the end of the USA as we know it.
That's right. The end of the USA as you know it. The USS of A is dead. That is correct. The USA as you got to know it under the unions and Obama, the Chicago machine candidate Barack Obama, is dead. That's right. The USS of A is dead and the USA is alive. Hail to the chief. Governor Walker's victory shows that public sector unions are over. And despite a last-minute smear campaign where the unions and the illegitimate Obama machine accused Scott Walker of fathering an illegitimate love child, he won. The fiscal cancer that is devouring America, devouring Wisconsin, and devouring every state in the land because of public unions, the cancer is being cured by Dr. Walker. Yes, Dr. Walker is administering the medicine that is necessary. We know what happens when public sector unions take control of a state. The states go bankrupt. Greece, by the way, is the example par excellence of what happens when public sector unions take control of a nation. Do you know that in 1959, Wisconsin was the first state to allow collective bargaining by government employees? And guess what happened? You now have baby boomer union retirees who would like to travel the world on the workers' backs. And the state is bankrupt. Many other states are bankrupt, such as California. Do you think it's fair that a person with a 75 IQ working in the Department of Motor Vehicle Bureau should retire with an $80,000 a year pension? Who's going to pay for it? A person with a 75 to 85 IQ should retire with a $90,000 a year pension? Well, that's what's happening across America, across California. And even Democrat cities in California yesterday demanded, voted rather, you won't read that in the paper, San Diego and San Jose, both Democrat cities in the state of California, said that they've got to rein in pensions. Public sector pensions are out of control. So the fiscal medicine that Scott Walker is administering is certainly a bitter pill to swallow, but it frankly is a pill that even Democrats are willing to swallow. Never mind the crybabies who say that democracy is dead. No, democracy is not dead. Democracy is alive and well. And the USA is not dead. The USA is alive and well. It's the USS of A that is probably now dead. The United Socialist States of America, as I so aptly pointed out in Trickle-Up Poverty and Trickle-Down Tyranny, is on the way out, I hope. But, of course, a long way to go until November. Long way to go. Scott Walker, after all, ran for office, and he promised change when he ran. That's right. And it looks like his fiscal conservatism is actually working. Why? State budget? It's balanced. Jerry Brown, are you paying attention? Unemployment rate dropping, now below the national average. Paying attention, Jerry Brown? Property taxes are down in Wisconsin. Paying attention, Jerry Brown? Fraudulent sick leave policies have been ended. Paying attention, Jerry Brown? Government in Wisconsin stopped forcibly collecting union dues from workers' paychecks. Paying attention, Jerry Brown? The fact of the matter is this was a tremendous victory for common sense. And the sucking sound of the union bosses' bloated pension plans is coming to an end. But this is just the beginning, frankly. It's the beginning of a long battle. We need recall elections in many states of the union. And we need to educate people in America, both Democrat and Republican, independent, that the people who are on these bloated pensions have to come to terms with reality. You may not know it, but the controversial law in Wisconsin that reined in pensions exempted police and firefighters. That was a political concession that was necessary to get the legislation passed. However, this must be repaired. As much as we all respect our police, the fact of the matter is We cannot exempt public safety workers from pension reform. It must be done. People cannot afford to pay for these billions of dollars that are now sitting on the books. We are shackled with this. Nobody can pay for this. Cities like Detroit, take a look at them. Take a look at Detroit. Blighted beyond belief. And so, ladies and gentlemen, the Chicago Machine candidate, Barack Obama, who was put in office by the unions, by money we don't even know where it came from, is now very, very worried indeed. So worried that he's at four fundraisers today, and he has ignored the veterans of World War II spitting on the graves at Normandy. There's no other way to put it. No other way to put it.
Seven.
So the first lady who is faking her affinity for the military with some kind of, event or whatever, today is not even commemorating the anniversary of D-Day. Instead, she's raising money in New York City. President Obama, who doesn't need the military, apparently, is raising money. I think now it's Katzenberg, and Spielberg time again. Apparently, that's a well that never runs dry, because I think he was just there. He's back in Beverly Hills after visiting San Francisco. It's astonishing that there's no commemoration by Pelosi, Feinstein, Boxer, Schumer. No commemoration, so far as I know, by Romney. What, have they forgotten how they have their freedom? Is there something wrong with me that I'm the only one in the media who is getting worked up over commemorating these veterans from World War II? Is there something wrong with me that I'm stuck in the past like this? Should I forget the past? Of course I shouldn't forget the past. If you forgot the past, shame on you. If you've become like the Obamas, double shame on you. No, it's a great day in America if you can remember the veterans who gave us our freedom. And make no mistake about it. I don't care what you think about all wars, just think about that war. You know, when you say war, all wars are not equal. Some wars are different than other wars, just like people may be different. All wars are not equal. The outcomes are not equal. Everything was at stake in World War II. Had our nation not rallied, and we almost lost the war, by the way, if you've studied it as intently as I have as an amateur historian, we almost lost the war in the early days. The German scientists were so far ahead of us. It's actually quite astonishing when you consider how far advanced the Nazis were in their military weaponry. It's actually shocking to believe that they could produce the Tiger tank while we were producing these little tiny Sherman tanks that were called Ronsons by the men who burnt alive inside of them. They were hit by a shell and went afire, and no one survived. The men burnt up alive inside. Real men, not fakers on television. Real men, not Bruce Willis pretending he's in a foxhole with paint on his face. They burnt alive in tanks. They burnt alive in planes as they went down. They burnt alive. They froze to death in the forests. They drowned on the beaches. For what? You think it was for no reason? Had they not been willing, and most of them were not really willing to die. They didn't go there to be heroes. They wished they couldn't be there. Many of them prayed that they could get the million-dollar wound and go home. They didn't want to be there. They'd rather be home in the Bronx under a cover, going to a Prospect Park with their wives and children. You think they wanted to be there? Some did, but most didn't. The average man hates war. The average man hates war, but they were there. And then they knew what to do because they had to do it. There was no choice. Had they not been there, Hitler would have swept England. Hitler would have ruled the earth. And then there would be no freedom. There'd be no news. There'd be nothing. Nothing. We'd have no freedom. And yet we have an entire generation of, I don't even have a word for them. I could call them any name under the sun. It would have no effect. All you got to do is look at their faces on television and you know who they are. Just listen to their voices. Just see how these wonderful human beings, the society professional liars, see what they do every day of the week. Before the Wisconsin election, these rats were saying this is the most important election in the world. Everything will depend upon this election. The outcome of this election will determine the presidential election. Now the illegitimate, perverted left-wing rats. I'm choking on words. I have such contempt for them. They're the enemy. You talk about why America is screwed up. It's not even the politicians. All of the blame lies with the media. All of the blame for the collapse of this country lies with the media, both for the lies, the distortions, and what they leave out. And, of course, the sewer pipe that comes from Katzenberg, Katzenberg, Matzenberg, Ratzenberg, and Spielberg. Between the sewer pipe and the propaganda, America is reeling. But the victory in Wisconsin indicates that America is still whole. America can still throw off the union candidate that is now in the White House. The Tammany Hall, we all grew up, if anyone has a political knowledge. In New York City history, there was once a machine called Tammany Hall. And nobody could ever win in New York City unless Tammany Hall put them in office. The same in California today. The Brown Pelosi machine controls the state of California. Nobody can run anything unless they come from the Brown Pelosi machine, which is almost identical to the Tammany Hall machine, which is why, one, the state is broke, and two, the state is the most corrupt state in America. That's number one. Now you look at, you have the Chicago machine produces Barack Obama, and with unlimited money from sources we don't even know, he's foisted it upon the American people. And now we're facing another election. The American people have been asked several times since the imposter was foisted upon us what they think of his policies. The first election was in 2010. There was a resounding vote against Democrats and Obama. There was a mandate against him. The mandate said we're against Obama. Remember how many Democrats got thrown out? You forgot about that already? You forgot, as a caller said in the last segment, about the fact that Kennedy's seat, the first time in how long a Republican in Massachusetts won Kennedy's seat? How'd that happen? Again, they were voting against the fiscal insanity and the tyranny of Obama. And now again, here we have another major election. All the unions line up against him. All the Democrat machine lines up against him. And he wins. Why? Can even Democrats say we can't afford to live like this? And so if I were working for Obama, I'd be looking for a job at the Kennedy School of Dysfunctional Government. Because it looks to me that unless they pull off a scam, which is highly likely, he's going to be voted out. He'll be a one-term president. That, to me, is a reflection of what happened yesterday. And to wake up today on the 68th anniversary of the invasion of Normandy and to see that this president is just conducting fundraising and doesn't even take the time out at an airport tarmac to even fake a commemoration of these veterans, and the first lady doesn't even take time out from her self-aggrandizement and her narcissism to even spend 1 second acknowledging the veterans, tells me everything I need to know. They're completely, exactly what the New Yorker cartoon said they were. You remember that famous cartoon before the election? Does anyone remember it? Am I the only one? You don't remember that New Yorker cartoon? It came out a little bit before the Michael Savage, the famous Michael Savage profile in the New Yorker, which is dated August 3rd, 2009. No, that one came out before they were elected in 08. In fact, I have a copy of the original New Yorker article. It's the greatest one ever done of me yet, the best interview ever, actually done by a man who listens to me. Party of One, Michael Savage, unexpurgated by Kalefa Sena. I doubt that he still listens to the show, but the fact is, it's a great interview. I consider it the best interview ever done of me. But to get back to the main point, you look at the New Yorker cartoon of Barack and Michelle Obama that was run just before the election. And she is seen as a 60s radical. He is portrayed as a Che Guevara radical. And the cartoon was roundly criticized because it was done by a liberal magazine. They were trying to say this is how conservatives see the Obamas. Little did they know this is how America now sees the Obamas. That's all. That's all. Abe in Chicago, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Doc. My concern is that we're taking too much from this Wisconsin election and to our detriment in November. In other words, this was an election in one state to reaffirm a governor. The electorate was different yesterday than it will be in November. The dynamic is different.
Well, wait. Of course you can make the case that it has no bearing, but you're wrong. You're wrong for a couple of reasons, because the same forces are at play that will be at play. It's big unions plus the Democrat machine versus the population. That's all. It doesn't matter what the demographics of the population are. Even in San Jose, California, and San Diego, how do you explain that they voted for pension reform in two Democrat-controlled cities? Would you say that has no relevance to Obama?
Keep in mind that the Wisconsin...
No. Don't go back to Wisconsin. Let's put Wisconsin aside for a moment. We'll come back to it. Because I reject your conjecture. San Jose, California, is it a Democrat-controlled city? Yes. San Diego, California, is it Democrat-dominated? Yes. They just voted overwhelmingly for pension reform. How did that happen?
In the same way that the election of 2010 went heavily Republican, because there was no Obama face in the election. When Obama's face shows up in the 2012 election in this November, you're going to see a completely different dynamic. Obama was not on the ballot in 10. He wasn't on the ballot yesterday. He wasn't on the ballot in San Jose.
What do you mean you're going to see a different result? Why, he's so popular?
Well, yes, because of the forces that work for him in an election fraud capability.
Obama is the most divisive president in American history. He is also the most unpopular president in American history. You're going to tell me you believe the polls of CNN, which tell you his popularity is at 49, 48, 42? I don't believe a word they say. They were lying about Wisconsin the day before it, and now they're lying about it a day after it. So why do you believe one thing that comes out in the media?
I don't believe anything that comes out of the media, but I know my gut, and that is that these young people are controlled by him. Every speech he ever gave is at a college or university.
Yes, that's right, but there were many young people in Wisconsin. Wait a minute, hold it, sir. You're not arguing that there were no young people in Wisconsin. They were crying yesterday after Walker won.
No, but I'm just saying that they don't have the technology dynamic that they will have in November. And keep in mind, in Wisconsin...
Wait, let's take one statement. What do you mean? They didn't have it in Wisconsin? You mean somebody turned off their iPhones before yesterday?
Yes, because there's no requirement for voter ID. There's a requirement for voter ID in Wisconsin. We don't have that nationally. We need that nationally.
Different story, of course. But who's blocking voter ID? It's the illegitimate Justice Department that's on the side of the illegal aliens, mainly Mexicans. You know it and I know it.
Well, thanks for
the call. But the Republicans are fighting them tooth and nail to make sure that only Americans who are, let's say, have the right to vote, vote. All right, let's move on. Let's move on. 4 out of 10 union workers, by the way, vote to keep Walker in office. Four out of ten of them. Hawaii, Joe, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. My grandfather was in the third wave of the D-Davation, and I will never forget. But my point today is, yesterday you called our president Captain Ludwig, and I want to tell everyone the reason you did that was because our president's Social Security number previously belonged to a Mr. Ludwig, who just so happened to have died in Hawaii in 1890. And when Obama was here in Hawaii, his grandmother worked at the Records Department, and she found Mr. Ludwig, who never made a single claim on Social Security, and that's why Obama has his Social Security number, because he doesn't have one of his own.
I didn't know that. I was referring, of course, to King Ludwig II of Bavaria, who bankrupted the treasury through his aggrandizement and his building highways to nowhere, in essence, castles that nobody ever occupied. But I thank you for that reference. That's very interesting, indeed. If you care to comment on any of these comments, by the way, we just found the New Yorker cartoon, and it's from July 21, 2008. We're posting it on michaelsavage.com. And it's really well done. It shows Michelle Obama with an afro with an AK-47 on her back. And it shows Barack Obama with a turban on his head, wearing Indonesian Muslim clothing in the White House. Yeah, well, the New Yorker really went overboard on that one. My. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Look, it's a big day, and, you know, everything we fear about Obama is exemplified by today. Here we have the world of free men, Europe, America, recognizing that everything was up for grabs in World War II and that the men who sacrificed their lives should be remembered. And, of course, any decent person remembers them. And yet you have a president of the United States who, unlike Ronald Reagan, who I never refer to, by the way, but I played Reagan today because it was so stirring. He choked up and you could feel his emotion. Here we have a president who, instead of taking even 5 minutes, 5 seconds out from his fundraising stops, doesn't even commemorate the invasion of France on D-Day. And that says one thing to us. Then it's a day that we're all recognizing is a day that big unions plus the Obama machine was defeated in Wisconsin. Make no mistake about it. That's what happened in Wisconsin. The Chicago political machine plus big unions, if they're not one and the same, were defeated in Wisconsin by the people. You know, you can fool some of the people. Old Abe Lincoln, my dad taught me what Lincoln said. Walking the streets, who remembered what he said? Some things I remember. When I walked the streets with him in New York as a kid, I remember to this day, I must have been, I don't know, 5'4", who knows? I don't know why. He was not a formally educated man, but he was well-read. He used to read all the papers and think for himself. He held my little hand, and I don't know for what reason, he said, you know, there was once a great president named Abraham Lincoln. That's who the penny is commemorated for. Yes, Dad, who knew? And he said, Lincoln said, little Michael, you can fool some of the people some of the time. You can fool some of the people all of the time, but you can't fool all of the people all of the time. Somehow that stuck with me. And I believe that the Obama union machine exemplifies what old Abe said. You can't fool all of the people all of the time unless you control the media. Now, it is true they control the Lilliputians on the networks and the Lilliputians on the cable channels, with the exception of Fox News. We know that. There's no question. Everybody knows that by now. If you didn't know it before yesterday, you certainly know it today. They are 100% Pravda Izvestia, around-the-clock echo chambers for the union Obama machine. We know that. It's an embarrassment to think that we still have a media. So unless they can control all of the media all of the time, they're not going to be able to bamboozle all of the people all of the time. And that's what happened in Wisconsin. And the rest is history. Now, of course, we know that Romney needs to change course. We know that Romney is running a tepid campaign. We know that Romney needs to fire his campaign staff immediately and replace his staff with the Walker staff. We know that the Romney campaign staff are undermining him. We know that the Romney campaign staff is the same staff that destroyed the McCain campaign by telling him to walk the middle ground and say nothing. And unless Romney himself or Ann Romney or one of his sons hears me and taps Dad on the shoulder tonight and says, Dad, Savage said the following, or Donald Trump hears me and tells Romney this, I'm afraid that we could lose the election in November and we'll wind up with the very same machine candidate that we have now. If Romney stays on this course, I don't think there's going to be enough fire to organize the people. I don't think the people will come out because they're not going to be motivated. Yes, there was a victory by 8-9 points in Wisconsin, and that's a huge landslide given the divisiveness of the campaign and how the people were so activated, and the turnout was very, very high, and believe me. So 9 points in a close election is a landslide. And when you see elections being determined by 1 point, 2 points, think about that. They say, oh, it's a close election. It wasn't a big victory. It was a monster victory. Look at all of our elections in this country, how close they've been. The country is very, very evenly divided. And yet even Democrats crossed party lines in Wisconsin and said no to out-of-control spending. And they said no to the unfair, thug-like tactics of the unions. That's what they did. They said, you know, I may believe in unions, but I don't believe in this kind of thug-like behavior. That went out in the 1950s. That was supposedly ended in the 50s. And yet the it seems like it's been resurfacing again under this president. So even the Democrats have said enough is enough, and they crossed party lines. And I think that the same thing could happen in November. Now, having said that, it could also not happen in November. There will be the October surprise in September. That will be an attack on Iran, orchestrated by the government with God knows what kind of draconian laws put in place. People fear this president in ways they've not felt fear in their entire life. They distrust this man. They distrust the machine. So we don't know whether it will hold up on a national level. If the election were held today and it was fair and square, Obama would be defeated by Romney by about 18 to 25 points. He is the most hated, the most divisive president in American history. Also, may I say, the most incompetent. This is the Savage Nation. It's only one man's opinion.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Have to get today's audio, including Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, the Republican, beating the Democrats, beating Obama cold after his recall election, something that the entire media is burying.
Next, I particularly want to thank you for your prayers, because for the last year and a half, the thing that has sustained Tonette and I and Matt and Alex is people many times, people I've never met before, come off the line, come off the farm and say, Governor, we're praying for you and your family. I can't tell you what that means to me. For me, it was the first trip to Independence Hall. And even though as a kid growing up, I thought of our founders as superheroes, as bigger than life, standing in that hall, it dawned on me that these were ordinary people who did something quite extraordinary. They didn't just risk their political careers. They didn't just risk their businesses. They literally risked their lives for the freedom we hold so dear today, and the men and women in uniform in this country defend every single day. In times of crisis, what has made America amazing has been the fact that throughout the more than 200 years of our history, there have been men and women of courage who stood up and decided it was more important to look out for the future of their children and their grandchildren than their own political futures.
Now you have to hear a Wisconsin communist voter being interviewed on Communist News Network saying that democracy is dead because Scott Walker won re-election. How does that work?
Mike volunteered for Barrett, voted today. You say you're very disappointed. A lot of folks here outside the Capitol sharing your opinion tonight.
We're not just disappointed. This is the end of democracy. We just got outspent $34 million to $4 million. This was the biggest election in America, and I hope you keep me on tonight. Because this hurts us all. Every single one of you out there in the nation, if you're watching, democracy died tonight.
I'm very emotional
because we all had a lot invested in this. This was it. If we didn't win tonight, the end of the USA as we know it just happened. That's it. We just got outspent $34 million to $4 million. And we don't have any other resource left but the people you see here behind me. And if the people you see here behind me can't get it done tonight, it's done. Democracy's dead.
Now you have to hear the left-wing fanatic, Bill something or other, talking about his crusade to get rid of the national anthem. Schmuck.
It is a major crusade of mine, a major cause of mine, and that is to get rid of the Star-Spangled Banner. Now, I know you're going to say I'm not a true American, I'm not patriotic. I don't think patriotism has anything to do with it. The national anthem is just absolutely monumentally unsingable. There's so much wrong with it, I don't know where to start. It's an abomination. First of all, it ranges two octaves. Most people can only do kind of one octave. I mean, when you think about it, it's bombs bursting in air, rockets, red glare. It's all kinds of, you know, a lot of national anthems are that way too, all kinds of military jargon. And the land, there's only one phrase, the land of the free, which is kind of nice, and the home of the brave. I don't know.
I mean, I get that part of it.
Are we the only ones who are brave on the planet? I mean, all the brave people live here. I mean, it's just stupid, I think. I'm embarrassed every time I hear it.
And here's what's on michaelsavage.com. Top left, the Allied invasion of Normandy. Never forget that on June 6, 1944, American boys invaded France to knock out Adolf Hitler. Forgotten by everyone in the media. Isn't that sickening? Well, today's the anniversary. June 6th, 1944. Forgotten already by the left-wing vermin in the media.
Someday, Liz, I'll go back, said Private First Class Peter Robert Zanetta of the 37th Engineer Combat Battalion and 1st Assault Wave to hit Omaha Beach. Lisa Zanetta Hen began her story by quoting her father, who promised that he would return to Normandy. She ended with a promise to her father, who died 8 years ago of cancer. I'm going there, Dad. And I'll see the beaches and the barricades and the monuments. I'll see the graves, and I'll put flowers there just like you wanted to do. I'll feel all the things you made me feel through your stories and your eyes. I'll never forget what you went through, Dad, nor will I let anyone else forget.
Of course, the big story is that big unions plus Obama have lost huge on their big gamble in Wisconsin recall election. They got kicked down the stairs. Weeping anti-Walker protester screams, democracy died tonight. Yeah, right. On the right side of Michael Savage, number two on the Wall Street Journal's bestseller list is Trickle Down Tyranny, on sale everywhere. Get your copy now. Walker's victory spells doom for public sector unions. Top GSA official tried to hide report on Vegas bash. California portends very bad news for Jerry Brown and public sector unions. Jerry Brown, as you all know, was put in by big unions, SEIU money. Terra fundraiser allowed to stay seated when judge entered. Apparently Sharia law is now alive and well in America. A hooded, masked Muslim refused to stand for a judge because she says her religion forbids her from standing to American law. Facebook is worth $20 a share, say some, down 30% from its original price. Excess exercise hurts the heart. Latest study, I told you that. France hits back at Obama over debt crisis. The Obama administration unmasked in trickle-down tyranny on the bottom of the website, the only website you need. Rare pictures of a World War II battle cruiser with the boys who served on it. 102-year-old veteran recalls D-Day, an old woman. Would you believe it? Believe this? Before and after D-Day, rare color photos. They're unbelievable. They're like the boy next door. These are the people who liberated us up from Adolf Hitler. Without these guys, Hitler would have won. We'd have no freedoms whatsoever. And the vermin in the media wouldn't even be allowed to talk. And yet they make almost no reference to D-Day. All this and more right here on The Savage Nation.
Wait, hang on before I go.
I read an article on how the economy has affected consumers and that customer service and return policies are really now the main reasons people choose to do business with a company. Case in point, it's time to replace the blinds, shades, or shutters in your home. You take your measurements, you head off to the big home improvement store. Sure, they take your order. But when your window coverings arrive, you find out they don't fit. Because the schmuck from the plumbing department gave you bad advice. You trudge back and they tell you, sorry, no returns on custom orders. Not at blinds.com. Not at blinds.com. See, even if you mismeasure, which almost never happens, they'll remake it for free. Who does that? There are also over 100 real experts in-house happy to assist. Get free color samples, free shipping, and no sales tax in most states. Plus, expert installers if you need one. That's Blinds.com, where their prices absolutely crush home improvement store prices. Blinds.com, I've used them for blinds. I love them. Blinds.com. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I've done a Savage epidemiological survey about Viagra, and I determined that the blue pill mainly goes to the blue states. Now, how did I discover that? I discovered it because I only know conservatives. I don't actually know any liberals. And none of the conservatives that I know have ever used the pill. At least they say they haven't. So I can only assume that the blue pill only goes to the blue states. It's an astonishing fact when you consider that millions and millions and millions of these pills are sold every day and no one's ever used them. Never met anybody who used them. Again, it's open mic to Mike. I'm going to open with a review by Daniel Ben-Ami. I don't know who he is. I don't know if he's related to Bon-Ami, the cleaner, the cleanser. But apparently there's a man named Daniel Ben-Ami, and he writes for the Wall Street Journal equivalent of England, the Financial Times. The ownership is the same that owns the Internationalist Leftist Economist. I used to read The Economist when I was young and impressionable and thought I was very intelligent for reading it. The same way some people used to walk around with the New York Times on the New York subways to show they were a cut above the daily news readers. But the fact of the matter is, the review is interesting because if it's an attempt to... The guy tries to smear me, and yet he praises me. He doesn't quite know what to make of me. So let me read the review. Trickle Down Tyranny came out a little while ago, Financial Times, by Daniel Bon-Ami, not related to the sink cleanser. He writes this. It is hard to suppress a frisson of excitement. I like that word. That's very liberal, a frisson of excitement. That's sort of like a frappuccino, a cappuccino, a macchiato. You have to drink these drinks to know what a frisson of excitement is. So he writes, it's hard to suppress a frisson of excitement associated with doing something illicit when opening Trickle-Down Tyranny. Successive British governments have banned its author, Michael Savage, from entering the country on the grounds that he preaches hate. This is despite the fact that the American authorities have never prosecuted the conservative for such an offense in his home country. Certainly does not take long to see that Trickle-Down Tyranny is no classic. It does not stand alongside The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, The Color Purple, or The Grapes of Wrath, even though all have suffered censorship in the past. Let me pause right there. He makes no sense. Yes, those books were censored, but none of the authors were banned from entering England, Mr. Bon-Ami. I don't understand what your point is. Well, he goes on. It is also clear that Savage's views are deeply controversial. He is passionately hostile to Islam. Pause. You're wrong. I'm hostile to Islamists. I guess you got that wrong in order to go along with your vermin and your governments who are trying to smear me, Mr. Bon-Ami. You ought to stick to sink cleansers instead of writing reviews. Savage argues that America should not have supported the overthrow of Egypt's President Hosni Mubarak. Yes, sir, I'm opposed to the overthrow of Egypt's President Hosni Mubarak, moron, because he was our best friend in the Middle East for 35 years, idiot. And you're going to compare him to the Islamists? What world do these British writers live in? Savage also argues that America should not have supported the overthrow of Egypt's President Mubarak and rejects the view that climate change is a problem. Unbelievable. I never rejected that climate change is a problem. I just said that man is not causing it, schmuck. We all know that this is a hype put out by friends of yours, like Al Gore, to push green technologies so people can make billions of dollars, Mr. Bon-Ami. You should know that from all the years in the sink cleaning business. He then goes on to say whether such views should be suppressed is a different matter. The case for banning Savage rests on the assumption that potential readers are so feeble that contact with his ideas can make them commit violence. In any case, reading the work of Savage and his ilk can help put broader social developments into context, says this Mr. Bon-Ami. Now, here comes the best line of the review. I love this line. He writes, reading Trickle-Down Tyranny is much like watching a grainy, black-and-white documentary from about 1950. His hysterical anti-communism is reminiscent of the Cold War at its McCarthyite peak. Let me pause right here, Mr. Bon-Ami. The fact of the matter is, if you knew anything about what you were writing, you would know that the Venona Papers, published about 12 years ago, confirmed that McCarthy was right, that the communists had penetrated the U.S. government, had penetrated the U.S. media, and McCarthy is an American hero, sir. He goes on. He says, but the twist is that Savage is talking about today, not then. In Savage's schema, Barack Obama is the new Lenin. This is not a rhetorical flourish, but a central theme of his work. The quote, and then he quotes me. Here's the quote. Tell me if you agree with my quote. Quote, the Obama administration's intent is to weaken our economy, to further a crisis of the international financial system, and facilitate its takeover by a U.S. global financial elite on the scale of the Leninist takeover of the Russian economy, close quote. I still believe it's true. Then he goes on. Here he gets into the interesting part of his paranoia and insanity. In many respects, Savage's thesis is reminiscent of traditional anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. How he goes from that to anti-Semitism is beyond me, but being British, I would not expect much logic left in their minds. Once they try to ban you, they try to destroy you. He sketches a world in which the American president is simply a puppet of international financiers intent on imposing a world government. George Soros and Goldman Sachs are particular targets for Savage's ire. To be fair to Savage, he emphasizes he is staunchly opposed to anti-Semitism itself. He is also an uncompromising defender of the state of Israel. He leaves that hanging like that's a bad thing. Of course, to Brits, that's a very bad thing. If you're an uncompromising defender of the state of Israel and you're in Britain, in the elite, you are a Nazi. There is no talk in his work of any compromise with the Palestinians. He goes on. At the center of trickle-down tyranny, therefore, is a conspiracy theory in which the wealthy and financiers, in particular, are duping ordinary Americans. Time and again, Savage emphasizes the huge gap between Wall Street, along with its corrupt allies and regular citizens. Readers who instinctively react against Savage's ultra-conservatism would do well to pause here. Strip out the archaic anti-Marxist rhetoric, put aside his more controversial positions, and the thrust of Savage's conspiratorial thesis is widely accepted across the political spectrum. Now, let me pause right here. That's one of the most convoluted sentences I've ever read in my entire life. Strip out the archaic anti-Marxist rhetoric. Why is it archaic if we have a Marxist president? I don't see where the archaic part comes in. And the thrust of Savage's conspiratorial thesis is widely accepted across the political spectrum. So that means I'm right. To most people, I'm right. He then goes on to say there is a pervasive sense among American citizens of all stripes that they are detached from the nation's rulers. Do you agree or disagree with that? Of course you agree with that. The gap is perceived to be both social and economic. This theme is as central to the Tea Party as it is to Occupy Wall Street. And then he compares my book to a guy who wrote for on the leftist side, which was praised. Yet, in essence, Savage's argument is the same as my argument is the same as the other guy, even though I'm derided and he isn't, because I'm a right winger and he isn't. Both see Wall Street parasites sucking the blood out of contemporary America. Nor are such views confined to either end of the political spectrum. Polling by the Pew Research Center, a so-called nonpartisan organization based in Washington, D.C., it's not a nonpartisan, it's a radical leftist research center, by the way, shows a very large majority of Americans agree with the statement that in the U.S. the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Of course they agree with it. It's always been true. My mother told me that's how the world worked. She said as you get older, you'll find out the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Nothing's ever changed, sir. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
One of the best governors in America is Scott Walker. He happens to be the first governor in American history to successfully win a recall election against him. Joining us right now in the Savage Nation to discuss this great story is Heritage Foundation Senior Fellow Brian Darling. Brian, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it is great to talk to you today.
Well, we both know this impact. We both know that this recall election is going to have a major impact on the November election. What's your take on it?
Well, this is going to have a huge impact. The left pushed all their chips into the middle of the table in Wisconsin, and they lost them all. They really went all in on this campaign. Although President Obama didn't personally show up in Wisconsin because he was reading the poll numbers and understood that things were going in the wrong direction, this was something that the left had pinned all their hopes on. The fact that public unions and all the money that they're extorting from state governments that's funding the union efforts nationwide was under attack because of some minimal reforms on the part of Governor Walker. If you look at his actual reforms, they weren't all that dramatic, but the left wanted to make it the end-all, be-all. They made their fight in Wisconsin, and they lost.
How important was this election for the future of Wisconsin? It was do or die, wasn't it?
Well, for Wisconsin, it's very important because Governor Walker came in. He had a big deficit he had to deal with, and he's turned that situation around. He's actually cut taxes and shown the American people and other governors that you can govern without raising taxes. You can balance a budget. You can go at common sense government reforms to cut expenditures by making reforms to public union employees' contracts. And the fact that you have a situation where they're contributing a little bit more to their health care and a little bit more to their pensions, just like every other American, I think that makes the people of Wisconsin feel better. You got to understand, these people of Wisconsin have been through it for a year, just an inundation of all this information about how evil their governor was and how he was destroying unions and destroying the state. And then after a period of time, they saw, well, my taxes went down, the budget's balancing, things seem to be going pretty well, there's pretty good job growth in the state of Wisconsin, and the people liked it. And the referendum in that election was on the governor's tenure, and he got a high five from the people of Wisconsin.
With the Wisconsin Senate now being controlled by the Demon Cats, will Walker be able to get anything of importance passed?
Well, he might not be able to push too much, but you have to remember, this is Wisconsin legislature doesn't meet all that much, so they aren't going to be doing much more work, if any, for the remainder of this year. You have an election coming up in the fall, so this may be a talking point for the left to say that they picked up the Senate because they picked up one seat, but it's a big defeat. I mean, they lost in their fight to get rid of the governor, they lost in their fight to get rid of the lieutenant governor, and they lost all of the races with the exception of one in the Senate. So this shouldn't inhibit Governor Walker's agenda too much. It might actually enhance the incentive for Democrats to come on board to his agenda because it's a popular agenda.
Could this be the beginning of the end of public sector unions?
I mean, obviously people have the right to collectively bargain, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But when you're talking about public sector unions, it's not a fair fight. It's not a fair negotiation at all because you have these public sector unions that are giving money to candidates who run for office. They win office, and they're on the other side of the bargaining table. It's like you're bargaining with yourself when you're writing your contracts and you're setting pay levels. So it's an unequal negotiation. It's not fair to the taxpayers because they're the ones that get stuck with the bill. So I think that this should be a strong piece of evidence for other governors in different states that they can go after these public unions, make the system just a little bit more fair, make sure that public sector employees are not getting paid more than average private sector employees in their state, make sure they're not getting great benefits, these gold-plated health care and pension plans that your average citizen doesn't have. I mean, you look at these states, especially Wisconsin and other states with very high unemployment rates, and they see these public sector unions getting these wonderful plans using their tax dollars. It's truly outrageous. So I think we'll see other states copying Wisconsin. I think you're going to see Washington looking to Wisconsin and maybe federal policies that mirror the policies that we saw being ratified by the people of Wisconsin.
Well, what does it tell you that almost 4 out of every 10 union members voted for Governor Walker? How do you like that? 4 out of 10 union members voted for Governor Walker.
Well, the union households provided significant support to the governor. One of the reasons why is because the people of Wisconsin rejected the idea of getting rid of and replacing a governor who had done nothing wrong. I mean, basically these left-wing unions attacked him, the leadership of the unions attacked Governor Walker because they disagreed with his policies, not because he'd done anything unethical or illegal. So the fact that he was attacked for his policies, I don't think people like that. They like having regularly scheduled elections. They like having politicians serving out their term. And if they do a bad job, they get kicked out. If they do a good job, they keep their job. So I think many of the people of Wisconsin and the union members, it left a bad taste in their mouth that Governor Walker was being attacked for policies. And furthermore, I mean, most union members are pretty conservative. I mean, they're socially conservative. They love their guns, for the most part, pro-life voters. And I don't think they agree with this far left-wing agenda where the union leadership is in bed with the far-left Occupy Wall Street movement trying to move this country in a place where it really shouldn't go. I don't think they agree with these socialist light policies that our president's pushing. And so I think what we saw in Wisconsin was even a good percentage of the rank and file members of unions rejecting what their leadership is trying to push in America because even they understand that it's just going way too far.
What effect have Walker's policies had on the state of Wisconsin? I mean, he's a fiscal conservative.
I think Walker's policies have had a great effect in helping to balance the budget. He inherited a massive deficit when he came into office, and he's moved very close to having balance for the state. He's been able to reform the pension system so that public employees are paying their fair share into the system. He's making sure that public employees are paying their fair share into health care. And so it's made it a more balanced system where the public sector unions don't have undue influence over the policies of the government. I mean, they were protesting in the streets and boycotting work. And in the end, the people won and the governor won because his policies are reasonable. One of the very fair things that the governor did was he made contributions to the unions voluntary on the part of public employees. Now, that's a personal choice that individuals should make. If they like what their union leadership is doing, they'll pay for it. If they don't like it, they shouldn't be forced to pay for it. Common sense reform. So I think you're going to see other states look to Wisconsin and maybe follow this model.
Well, look, this means Romney could win Wisconsin if he stopped listening to his dumb advisors.
I do think so. I think this puts Wisconsin in the toss-up category. Many on the left are saying that the exit polls indicated that Obama was doing really well and up by 7 points in the state, when these same polls indicated that it was going to be a toss-up and people were going to be up really late watching these results. The exit polls in Wisconsin were wrong. And so you have to take a second look at Wisconsin as possibly a toss-up state. Now, remember, this is a state that's only gone Republican two times in the last 48 years for Reagan and Nixon. So it's not a Republican-leaning state in the presidential sense, but it may be this year. And if Wisconsin's a toss-up, President Obama's in deep trouble. I have to imagine there are people in Chicago in the Obama campaign who are very nervous right now because they're looking at what happened in Wisconsin. They're looking at the polls. They're looking at the economy. And they're not feeling very good about their prospects. So we can expect one or two things to happen with the Obama campaign. They're either going to triangulate and try and start working with the Republicans to look more reasonable, or they're going to dig in and go even further to the left and try and demonize Republicans and fight a class warfare battle right to the end.
Brian, darling, thanks for joining us today on The Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks for having me on. I'd love to come on again.
This is The Savage Nation.
Savage.
Mr. Lee, and what did he have that the girls went wild for him? I don't know. I always wondered who Mr. Lee was. I read you a very heavy-duty schizophrenic review from the Financial Times, and I know that most people didn't want to hear it because the words were too long, the sentences were too convoluted and complicated. So I know what callers I'm going to really get on the Savage Nation. This is what shock jocks should get, things like,
hey, Mike, I'm going to make some meatloaf this weekend, and if I put some breadcrumbs in it, am I becoming a liberal by cheating on my guests by putting some bread into the meatloaf?
Yeah, why don't you ask me questions like that? That would really make my day. You know what I mean? Master's degrees, PhD, travel the world, look for the answer. I'll answer questions about breadcrumbs and meatloaf. That'd be great. Why not? What the heck? You got to please your audience. Here's an interesting article to confirm that we have a Marxist regime in the White House. It's actually a Marxist gangster regime on the order of Fidel Castro. Headline: Skechers deceived consumers with shoe ads, and the government is forcing the shoe company Skechers to pay $40 million to settle government charges over its claim that fitness shoes tone muscles. Now, you say, well, what's wrong with this picture? A small amount of the settlement would be used to administer the payouts. That means the gangster regime in the Federal Trade Commission will be paying their pensions and salaries with money they stole from the Skechers shoe company. It's astounding to me how you don't see the gangsterism and the Castro-like behavior of this government. Skechers deceive consumers with shoe ads? Ads are all deceptive. So what'd they pick on Skechers for? Listen, I have no stock in the company. I've worn their shoes from time to time. This is a clear example of the Marxist nature of this government and the gangster nature of this government. I can name some other corporations that should be sued instead of Skechers. Let's start with corporations that I name in trickle-down tyranny who have paid no income taxes for the last few years. You want to hear a few of them? I name them. I've told you their names. Why are they not sued? Answer, they're bundlers for Obama. So I rest my case. I know what I'm talking about. Do you know what I'm talking about? In the old days, people would come to this country to become Americans, not to drag us back into the cesspool that they came from. That's what I see. That's how I see it. Take a look at the Vermin lawyers. You see how the Skechers thing started? Alaska gets $71,000 in Skechers settlement. Vermont gets $70,000. Virginia, $715,000. Maine, $75,000. Look at these criminals. Now, who started this? Skechers USA Investor Alert. The Briscoe Law Firm and Powers Taylor LLP announced investigation of Skechers USA. Law firm of Levy and Korsinski launches an investigation. Holzer, Holzer and Fistel, LLC, announces so these Vermin lawyers, these rats, these class action thieves and crooks and rats. If I were president, I would arrest every class action lawyer in America. I'd seize all their assets going down to the third generation, and I'd take their children out of school and make them clean toilets in Mexico for what they've done to this country. How do you like that? Did I express myself clearly to you? Class action lawyers are the worst gangsters and the worst criminals in American history. The worst. They take a legitimate business and they parasitize it like a virus that invades a body like a retrovirus. And again, I have no stock in Skechers. But this is why businesses are dying. Every ad is deceptive. But why does the government go after some companies and not others? Apparently, they didn't give enough money. They didn't kick enough money up to the commander-in-chief. I cannot believe this. You mean you really believed if you bought a shoe you were going to lose weight? Unbelievable. Who would believe that? Well, anyway, I don't even want to. Don't call me about Skechers. Let's go to the callers now on the book thing. I'm distracted. Play another rock and roll while I'm looking for a story to talk about. What time is it?
Yeah.
Can we just play this? No.
Maybelline. Why can't you
turn off Maybelline? I don't want to hear it. I'll tell you what I want to hear. You know this one I want to hear? The one with the shabup shabup. Where's the shabup shabup song? How does that go? I'll tell old stories. That's all anyone wants to hear anyway. Mike, tell us some stories about when you were a kid. Tell us about riding in the Plymouth Fury when there was a car wreck on Highway 42 in South Fallsburg. Mike, tell us about the comedian who got thrown in the pool with his clothes on, Mike. This is a great song. What is this song called? I Only Have Eyes for You. I love this song. Love by the Sewer Plant was written at the time the song was out. Young Love. Love by the Sewer Plant. Remember what love was? Can you imagine what happens to a human being when they lose love? They become a Democrat? You know, when all hope dies and all dreams die, you know what? You become a Democrat. Because then you could hate everybody for having it stolen your dreams. You just got old, that's all. How can you go around like you're 17 when you're 70? You can't. Or when you're 37, you become a mean, nasty liberal. So when this song was out, I don't know, 59, 58, right? That period. Car. I like to watch Meekum auctions at night now. I can't take movies anymore. They're so violent and disgusting. I watched one last night. I couldn't sleep all night. A guy cut up a family. I don't know how it could be made. But then it's Robert Redford's channel. What do you expect from him? Right? I said to myself, no one's forcing you to watch it. No one's making you watch him invade a house and tie people to a chair with duct tape and kill them. Guy with tattoos and, you know, like earrings. Scum. So I turned it off. So I switched to Meekum Auctions. I had the junk people buy. They paid $180,000 last night for a 63 split window Corvette, a black one. $180,000 for a 63 Corvette? How could anyone want a car like that? You know what you could buy for $180,000 in a car today? Why would anyone want that car? I don't get it. They stink. I have a 65 Caddy. The most I would ever expect to get for it would be 95, 100 because I owned it. Otherwise, it would be worth about $14. But so I watched car shows. And there's a guy who does a show called Chasing Classics. He's not, I don't like him particularly, but I like the cars. I like that show that's on HDTV. I'm trying to like watch gentle shows at night. I can't watch a nature show. Every nature show, my heart breaks. In the Arctic, the tern is left in the cold. Her babies are dying in the ice. She goes out 65,000 miles into the sea to find a fish. And while she is away, the pelicans try to eat her children, her little chicks, as they're chirping away in the Arctic ice. The father tern or the mother tern is swimming across the sea, trying to get a little anchovy to bring back to the babies. Then they show her coming back, evading 50,000 different animals. She comes back up onto the ice, and the babies are gone. Oh, how can you take this? How can you take it? Last night I watched The Hatching of Sea Turtles. I couldn't take another minute. It was worse than a slasher movie. The poor turtle comes out of the water. It travels 1,500 miles from South America to Ascension Island. To lay an egg, a little egg it lays. It does this every year. It goes 1,500 miles to one little island. And then what happens? Just about the time, I think, 6 weeks later when the hatchlings come out, here come the pelicans. Here come all the birds of prey. And they're sitting there in droves waiting for the little turtle hatchlings to appear out of the sand. And before the creatures could even crawl 5 feet, they grab them and gobble them down. 1 out of 100 makes it back into the sea. Is it any wonder that I'm an animal rights activist and lover, why I give money to various and sundry? It's about the only thing worth living for lately is animals. But you can't upset the order of nature. What are you going to do, interfere with the pelican eating the turtle hatchling? Then what? Then the pelicans die. It's a very delicate balance. And you can't really interfere with the balance, truthfully. It's very difficult to do without destroying another species. It's, you know, what it comes down to. It's dog-eat-dog, it's survival of the fittest, it's the nature of nature. There's nothing you could do about it. That doesn't mean that you have to go ahead with the wholesale slaughter or that you should be cruel to animals. That's a whole different story. But it's interesting to me that in the order of nature, you've got the survival of the fittest and you got dog-eat-dog. And yet here in the West, we treat our dogs, and myself included, better than most people treat their children in the third world. We buy them outfits. They have better medical care than a kid does in most third world countries. Better diets, better food, exercise. They sleep in beds with us. How did that happen? I mean, you just think about this. What's become a norm to us, look at all the white girls in New York City, for example, walking with a dog and no children. Is that normal?
Savage.